Friends, welcome to the Old Fashioned on Purpose podcast, where we explore what we have left behind as we have raced towards progress as a culture and how we can get the good stuff back. So I'm your host, Jill Winger, and my family and I have been homesteading out here on the wide open Wyoming prairie since 2008. And one of the, I guess, primary features of our homestead, which many of you know, is that it's very cold, very windy, and potentially one of the worst places on earth to try to grow fruits or vegetables. I mean, I could probably find worse places, but it's not great here. It's pretty challenging. So I talk about our struggles with this extreme sport of growing vegetables in Wyoming. And so I'm always looking for unorthodox ideas and unique tricks and hacks. And so when I got an email from Nate of the Manti Homestead, I knew I had to have him on. So they are growing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nate, bananas, lemons, passion fruit in Utah. I know you have lots of other things too, but tell me, kind of give me the rundown, because this is remarkable to say the least.
Yeah. I don't forget the bananas and tangelos, because like right now, that's kind of our favorite topic.
Awesome. Awesome. And just so you know, guys, if you're not watching this on YouTube, you're listening to it, Nate is in the greenhouse. So you're going to hear some birds. You may hear some noises. So I realize that's not standard podcast audio, but just, you know, it's real life. So that's what you're hearing in case you hear that. So Nate, I mean, I have so many questions for you. I'm fascinated with this. We visited Mr. Russ Finch in Alliance, Nebraska a number of years ago. He's kind of, his deal is called Greenhouse in the Snow, and he has this amazing geothermal greenhouse. I'm sure you're acquainted with him, where he's growing all sorts of tropical stuff. But yeah, I'm excited to hear how you have also followed in these ideas of tropical fruits in wintry places. So I guess give us a little background about your climate and what brought you to this place where you wanted to go to growing tropical stuff.
Okay, sounds great. And Jill, it's really awesome to be on your podcast. I love your channel and I love what you're about. You know, Old Fashioned on Purpose. I think that actually encapsulates what we do as well. Because for years and years, I was brought up into a family where preparedness was just something that we did. Grandpa had a large garden. He had a makeshift greenhouse, but he was known for his 1-acre garden. And my mom and my grandma, my aunt, they were just naturally those that would prepare and would bottle and would preserve food for, you know, a time of hardship. So that impulse was born out of my grandpa going through the Great Depression. So luckily for me is the lessons learned from that era has actually been passed down, luckily, you know, through my mom to myself. So a lot of what we have done here has just been matter of fact, just a natural impulse for me. So I like when you talked about you look for unorthodox things. So this greenhouse is very, very unorthodox. So I remember years ago actually watching your YouTube channel when I was doing the research for a greenhouse. And I saw your interview when you went to Nebraska and went through Russ's, you know, amazing greenhouse in the snow greenhouse. And I loved it. And so we stewed on that concept of building a greenhouse for years and years. And like 4 years ago, we just about ordered one of those kits because I love it. You have a fantastic idea. As I saw, I'm a banker, you know, so I'm into finance and definitely into politics. And so as I've surveyed, especially the last 3 years, when there's been a lot of shifting happening in society, there's been shortages. So all of the prepper impulses have really been exasperated. Like, it's like, whoa, this is getting intense. And I felt in my heart that I needed to do a greenhouse, but I also felt that I needed to push the concept of a greenhouse because I'm in Utah. So when you talk about your horrible growing conditions in Wyoming, I relate. We our growing season is awful. And so I set out to build a greenhouse using ideas from many wonderful greenhouses that I've seen out there, but to really amalgamate all of them into a greenhouse that would work off grid. So what I'm growing here in Utah in the snow has been without electricity, without fans, without backup heaters. And it all started with my grandpa who went through the Depression, who passed along the values of self-sufficiency through his daughter to his grandson.
So I love that you have that legacy that you're able to carry on. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So I'm especially fascinated because you have taken this to the off-grid level. Because just a little background for those of you who aren't familiar with the greenhouse in Nebraska, it's almost off-grid, but he does circulate the geothermal air with a little fan. And it's a very cool design. You can tell he's put so much work into it. So I'm curious how you kind of amalgamated those ideas into what you have now. So can you just walk us through just a bird's eye view of the construction and how you thought this out?
Yeah, definitely. Because I am not a science guy, but I am somebody that will get into any project I do and I get very intense until I figure it out. And so, you know, seeing the greenhouse in the snow idea and how he's using Mother Nature to help him as much as possible, that was clearly something that motivated me. And his efforts are just legendary, in my opinion. So as I was looking into it, you know, the thought that this had to be a Wallapini, because though we are known for the greatest snow on earth here in Utah, you know, where I'm at, we also get up to 100 degrees in the summers. So we have the twin nemesis of ultra cold and fairly decent extreme hot weather as well. So how can I build something that is going to truly make it both the heat and the cold? And so we knew that we had to have an approach that would affect both ways. And the Wallapini style, so passive solar technology, immediately was just an obvious. So the way that we approach this greenhouse, you know, my greenhouse is 30 inches into the ground. So with the greenhouse approach, it really, like, a greenhouse is no more or no less than a bunch of contradictions. You have everything fighting each other. You have to have this massive amount of glazing to let the UVs in, to let the sun in so that your plants can be healthy and grow. Well, with that, you have an R3, which is just awful insulation. And, you know, and so my yes. front wall is 100 feet and then 12 feet tall of weakness with R value. So I have to have that for the input. So to fight that, the rest of the greenhouse is just massive amounts of overcompensating insulation. So all of our foundation walls, the exterior wall, everything is overcompensated with insulation. I even have the back wall of my greenhouse is cement to collect thermal mass. So in the winter time, the whole back wall gets full input from the sun. But behind that thermal mass wall is two layers of insulation. So we're keeping all of that passive solar heat in to help that thermal mass stay effective. In front of that, I've got 2,000 gallons of water. So it's crazy. Between the thermal mass of the concrete, the thermal mass of the back grow bed, the thermal mass of the cement interior stem wall, and then also just the fact that we are tapped down into Mother Nature a little bit, 30 inches down, as well as some of our geothermal options we brought in. All of that is working together to combat the cold Utah winter. So
I was going to ask you about the mass with like water, because you see that recommended a lot, yes. but it's usually in small scales. And I'm like, I think you need a lot if you're going to actually get that yes. water to hold that heat. So it sounds like you have a lot.
Yes. And it's like you say, unorthodox, you know?
Yes.
And so on that back wall, we've got 40 barrels. They're the 50-gallon blue barrels of water. I spray painted them just with a simple plastic rated spray paint. Very, very easy, because I did measure that, and that little bit from the blue barrel to the black barrel, it absorbed enough sun that it was worth it. It cost me $30 and yeah. it took me maybe a little bit of time. But yes, yeah, so that 2,000 gallons is huge, because, you know, two winters now we have been successful. Our bananas lived through two winters, our lemons, our oranges, our passion fruit, we have kiwi vines. So we so far have not killed anything because of cold temperatures, again, without fans. So sometimes I've had a lot of people view the greenhouse, especially on my YouTube channel, Manti Homestead. I've got a playlist where I show my construction of it. And some people will come and they're like, well, what? So what? Why does this work? I don't get it. Or what? Oh, I'm going to do it this way, modify this. And I can't really speak to all those things. I just know that small and incremental things were required and put all together, mix it all together, and it works. And so immediately, you know, after we had built the greenhouse, we had a property in Nauvoo, Illinois. I do real estate on the side. So I have 9 kids. So
okay, well,
we do a lot. Back to unorthodox, right? And so, you know, even though I've got a great W-2 job, we had the backup in real estate. And then all of this self-sufficiency, old-fashioned living is on purpose. And so when we sold a property in Nauvoo, Illinois, it was a fantastically performing vacation rental. And I sold it because I wanted to finally build the greenhouse. The world had gone mad in the 2020 era. And for various reasons, the prompting rested upon me, you need to do it. And so I sold that, paid off some debt. I had a little bit of money to go ahead and to basically try my idea. It's kind of funny when I was just wrestling with it. Like, why, Nate, do you think you can do a design that is not going to be off grid? Like, what? Who are you? What do you know? So what, I wrestled with myself. It was a struggle. And I just had a thought came to me. I remember clear as day coming home from work. And it was almost as if Grandpa Ver, you know, who had passed for some years, Nate, trust your design. And I'm just like, boom. So we just went forward and we tried it. And because it did work, I took the risk. I had the money. I took the risk. We felt immediately that we had to just share the design. I'm not saying I have all the answers, but everything that I've done is available for free because if it helps you and some of the things you're doing. So what my goal is accomplished.
I'm interrupting this episode for just a second to tell you about a homesteading event that may be near you. And if it is, you definitely gotta go. It's the second annual Modern Homestead Conference in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And before I tell you more, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that I can't attend and I am so bummed. I just couldn't make the dates work this year. But the good news is there are a ton of other amazing speakers and experts that you are going to learn so much from. Joel Salatin will be there, Lisa from Farmhouse on Boone, she's been here on my podcast, Homesteading Family, Sally Fallon, Jess from Roots and Refuge, and tons more. They'll also have Dr. Temple Grandin doing a very special talk this year. I got to see her last year and she was amazing. So this two-day event features presentations for both beginner and advanced homesteaders. There's topics like food preservation, seed saving, animal husbandry and processing, fire and homestead preparedness, herbalism, how to build a strong community, and that is just scratching the surface. So if you've never attended an event like this, trust me, it's really worth it to make some time and go. You're going to see these things in real life, in person, which will fast track your learning so much more. Plus, there's just nothing like getting to rub shoulders with people who are like-minded and doing all the weird and crazy things that you and I like to do. So get your tickets now. They're still for sale and you can grab them over at modernhomesteading.com. Yeah, I love that. And I think that that's really where we start to pioneer in these unorthodox places. You know, we can build on what our ancestors have given us. But I think one of the cool things about our era is we do have technology and we have the internet.
Yeah.
So we get the opportunity to take what they've given us, that legacy, but also improve and make it better and really think outside the box. And I love seeing people online and people who write books that are really just, you know, wrestling with those ideas and making them better and being really creative. I think that's just such a cool dynamic we have in this era with, you know, we have a lot of other bad things in this era, but that's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's so true. You know, and I think Grandpa Ver, I mean, would absolutely love this because he was a master gardener. I am not. And he built a greenhouse, you know, just like we all do. We all just think, well, we can just do a hoop house or we can just do this or that. And we have so many wonderful ideas, you know, wonderful thoughts for greenhouses, and they just get so hot and they burn up. And that's the same with his. Yeah. So here's a master gardener with a homemade greenhouse made out of reclaimed windows.
And it was beneficial in that he could start his tomatoes and some of the starts that he would do. But as far as what he wanted it to do, it didn't work at all. And so, but honestly, he was able to use it. And then he spurred, you know, so many of us, of his grandkids, are taking a lot of what he left us in his legacy. And we are trying it with, like you say, these new technologies. He wasn't aware of Wallapini passive solar technologies. He would love this. And that makes me smile quite a few times when I'm here in the greenhouse.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Which brings me to a question that I had. I want to backtrack a little bit for those listening who are like, what's a Wallapini and why is it different than a typical greenhouse? Because a lot of people are familiar with mine. We just have a standard greenhouse. It's basically a giant cold frame because there is no heat in it other than solar. So what's the difference between like my above ground standard greenhouse and what you have?
Oh, that's a great question. And before I answer that, I do want to say that a Wallapini or even a greenhouse is not the right answer. Like my channel, and I know your voice as well, Jill, is that we all need to just dig down and get our own inspiration. And so if you have other things that maybe they extend the growing season or you have grow beds or what, like all those things are right. So I just want to say that before I delve into what I've done, I'm just sharing what I've done for those people who are interested. But okay, so passive solar technology, the one thing that I love about what it does, I have my glazing wall set at a 55 degree angle. Now that's specific to my area and what I wanted. What that does is in the wintertime, the full greenhouse, my greenhouse is 100 feet long and it's 17 feet wide. In the wintertime, the sun lights up all of the grow space, and it even lights up the whole back wall all the way up to the back part of the greenhouse. And so that full cement wall and all the 2,000 gallons of water is in full intense sunlight. It's almost a perpendicular with the sun. Well, it is, especially at the first week of January. So that I set it so my coldest time would be the most intense input through the glazing with the sun. So because of that, just that little technology, what you're doing is you're basically paying some homage to Mother Nature. You're saying, I am never going to win the battle with you. I want you to be my partner. And so yes. I love that. So that's what it does in the winter. But the other benefit in the summer, as the sun moves, so the winter time, the sun moves into the south, you know, shining more northward. In the summer, it's almost straight up and down. And because of that, the back third of my greenhouse, which includes my two thermomass wall, which includes my 2,000 gallons of water, that is in the shade. And it's wonderful. So I am not trying to combat the Utah 100 degree temperatures with this whole thing, with a whole dome of input, baking and frying my plants. And so, yes. So tapping into that is extremely important. What does Mother Nature want you to do? Because if you go get into a match with her, you will lose. You will lose.
That is
so
very
one of
true.
The additions with my greenhouse for the summer, and this is very, very simple, but it was just an idea that kind of hit me. And I'm sure I'd seen variants of this, but I built an 18 inch stem wall in front of the glazing. And so in the wintertime, I simply have an insulated curtain that gives me an R4 to R5. So, and it's just shut up for the full, you know, about 4.5 months. I don't roll it up and I just shut. In the summertime, I roll that up. And so even when it's hot outside, that hot air comes into the greenhouse, and the even hotter air, which has naturally risen, is going to create natural convection. And the hot air is going to come up and then out my sides where I have my vent. I have simple windows and doors, and I have vents up top. So all of that fresh air comes through the 18-inch by 100-foot stem wall. So air in, lots of air up and out. And so we have natural airflow because of that in the summer. And so
that's
all of
brilliant.
This combines to help. Now in the wintertime, I close that curtain. Okay, well, how do you not, you know, how do you deal with that? Because in the wintertime, your plants still need carbon. It still needs ventilation. And so that's where some ideas I've seen from Mr. Finch and other greenhouses where they're bringing in earth tubes. So I do have pipes that okay. input cold air from outside. The air goes down 8 feet, and then every 10 feet in the greenhouse, I have an input of that fresh outside air, but it's taken air from outside, 9-degree air or 0-degree air, and it's warmed it up enough that it's, I mean, those inputs come in right next to citrus plants, and they're not killing my citrus plants because Mother Nature has warmed it up enough that I have fresh air coming in. And even in the wintertime, I'm opening my two small windows on the two sides of the greenhouse, and that convection is giving me fresh air. And we are releasing some hot air to get that convection, but it's fine. It has to happen. You have to have that carbon input into the greenhouse.
And so I'm just trying to visualize this because I know with the one in Nebraska, he had dug, and this is kind of what he teaches, I believe, digs like a massive pit or hole. And then you lay all your pipe, like lots of pipe, and then you fill that in, and then you build your greenhouse where the pipes run, circulate the temperate air through. So you didn't necessarily dig the giant hole, but you just dug some pipes in, rather. Is that how am I thinking of that correctly?
Yeah, exactly. So, and I show, like in my construction video number two, I show the excavation, because the excavation of this greenhouse was an absolute nightmare. And so,
I bet.
Yeah. So I do show that process because sometimes I know it's hard to understand, but you're welcome to take a look there. But, So with the greenhouse in the snow, and I'm not an expert on those wonderful greenhouses by any means, but a lot of times their runs are an 80-foot run from outside in the yard, and then they input into the greenhouse, and then they'll use in a wonderful way the use of fans to just suck that air in, and so it's used as a cooling mechanism as well as a heating mechanism. So I do something similar yet different. I have two different inputs outside the greenhouse, and I just have a little wood, almost like a tiny wood shed covering. So kids and cats and rodents don't go down and plug my
smart.
Tubes. yeah, when those tubes were dug, they became a sacred space. Like nothing is going to plug my tubes.
Yep.
Anyway, so those are outside, and there's six tubes in each side. So I have 12 different tubes. You know, each of them having an individual run. So one tube is 40 feet, one is 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, and then vice versa from the other side of the greenhouse. So we have the key here with all this minutia, all this greenhouse talk, is we have outside input, letting Mother Nature do its thing, which is we're taking those tubes down to her constant temperature, so that she can warm up that outside air so that we can have the required air and carbon needed for the greenhouse health.
Yes. And no fans, because you have the convection thing happening.
Yep, exactly.
Smart.
And so in the summer, okay. when we open up the 18-inch by 100-foot stem wall, and we open up all the like, so two doors and two windows, three vents, and that stem wall all opened up. Because of that, there's less convection pulling the air through the tubes. That's fine. It doesn't matter. So my banana tree in the summertime, those leaves grow 40 inches in a week. It is dumbfounding. You
Incredible.
Know how like we all grow yeah. squash to pat ourselves on the back? Like, I am a good yep. gardener. I love squash for that reason. I hate to eat squash, but I love to grow yep. it.
It's fun to grow.
it makes me feel like grandpa, even though I'm like yep. a pygmy to this guy, right? Bananas supersede the squash. They're absolutely amazing. 40 inches in a week, you know, and honestly,
yeah.
part of the reason why, like the greenhouse, what I'm growing, I, you know, again, we have 9 kids. And so there's 11 of us. I wanted sustainable year round growth. So like we're growing cucumbers all year, you know, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, I always call it the boring stuff, you know, but I tell people all the time, I'm not going to inspire you with celery. So some of the reason why I had brought in bananas and oranges, to be honest, full disclosure here, is I want to alert people that if you just think about the last 3 years, and if your head is at all following inflation or financing or geopolitics, there are a lot of fires in this world, and you don't have to wait for somebody else, government, to come and be the solution. You can be the solution in your backyard in small and simple ways. And so I'm using the bananas to try to get that message out there, to be a little unorthodox and be a little flashy, because I think that this is something we all can and should do.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think it's smart, though, because like it's not as compelling to say, I grow tomatoes in Utah in the winter. People are like, okay, cool. But like bananas get your attention. And, you know, honestly, when we built our greenhouse, definitely not the same at all tropical capability as yours. But I initially was like, what if I did lemon or what if I did this? And I'm like, you know, I really am just more compelled just to grow the boring stuff, like you said.
Beautiful.
Which is what I don't do it quite year round, but I can get a lot of greens and winter crops. And so, yeah, I think bananas are cool. Oranges are fun. But I'm like, let's just get the staples. That's really still very worthwhile to pursue. Yeah.
Well, let's hit on that more. Because like one of your videos about potatoes, Jill, that is a way more important message then you should build a wall of peony. 1,000% more important. The one thing resting on my heart right now, Mr. Finance Guy, Mr. Political Guy, Mr. Like, oh my gosh, watch at these warning signs. The thing that's resting on my heart right now is just going back to very basics. So if you've never done a garden, start. If you have done a garden in the past and wondering hee-hawing if you should do it this year, do it. That message is more important than maybe anything I will say. This year, I am focused on potatoes and onions and carrots. You know, three staples that I can grow in abundance outside the greenhouse and that I can store. And I can make my mistakes now when life is still pretty dang good. But if we turn into something of scarcity, or if we go back to the 2021, you know, shortages, if we go into that or something even worse, let's say a simple cyber attack or something that turned the power off for a small amount of time, what are those things I can do that would truly give me a greater chance at self-sustainability? Those are the things that we all should be doing. And that is clearly my message.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. How much, like, are you still buying vegetables and stuff at the store? I mean, you have 9 kids, so that's a lot of mouths to feed. So are you able to get year round, like most of your produce needs with the greenhouse and your gardens? Like where are you sitting with that?
Yeah. So that's such a great question. The first year, it was so fun. About a couple, maybe 2 months into it, all of a sudden me and my wife are just like, we are not really going to the store anymore. And so my wife, you know, she was the one that was mainly tending the greenhouse with, you know, planting on a regular basis, you know, seeds, you know, trying to map out what we need and then having it. So we would constantly have all of these fresh greens. And so that first year we were really good at it. And then right now I'd say we're mostly good at it. I'm right in the middle of two remodels and my wife is, we're actually expecting baby 9. So I said we have 9 kids. We're 8 kids and
on the way. Yeah.
On the way. And so, I mean, I wish I could just show you or describe. The greenhouse is at full capacity right now. So we're definitely back up to that where there's tons to eat. Like right now I can literally go eat lemons, artichokes, peas, carrots, passion fruit, kale, cabbage, you know, all of that. So yes, if you diligently plant, this would definitely, there would be no need for the grocery store, no need for the fresh market. We are the fresh market.
Yes. Yeah. And that's such a powerful feeling when you get to that point. Even in a partially, right? Even if you still go to the grocery store sometimes, just that feeling of growing yourself, there's nothing like it. People don't get it. It's just until you've done it, there's just nothing like it.
Yeah. And there's more and more you hear concerns, and I won't go deep into that, but you know, right now there's been concerns with milk. There's also concerns with, you know, just some things, some technology, some scientific abilities we can do with plants. And I used to not pay attention to any of those type of headlines, but lately more now, just because I've been through the last 3 years and a lot of things that happened the last 3 years did not sit very well with me. And I'm like, wow, you know, if anything, I need to be watching more, not less. And so the more that happens, the more I want to be not only just in control of the quantity of food I can produce, but I want to be in control of the quality of food my family's eating. So my wife is a nutritionist, right, and I am the guy that I eat a lot of junk food, but I still, I'm a contradiction because I still want to push myself and more and more and more try to get healthy alternatives for my family because I am their provider.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I had a little, like I explained to you before, I have a little bit of a hard stop today, which is really unfortunate because I felt like we could talk for a very long time. But in the last few minutes we have together, I want to get as much information as we can for someone who's listening to this. They're feeling wildly inspired and they're like, I want to do this. I want to build something that I can grow, you know, past the solar year round. So first off, what does the investment look like? You don't have to share actual numbers if you're not comfortable with that, but could you give us a little bit of an idea of what you could expect to, in terms of what's going to take to build this?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So because we are such a large, extreme family, I went 100 feet. You know, maybe not everybody's going to build one 100 feet, but I'm like, if you're going to try to build something like this, you know, I just drive for it, man. Yeah, I drive a 2007 Ford F-150. So I put my money, I could afford to go buy a really cool truck too. And my kids get so mad because they're like, our friends think we're rich and we're really poor, Dad. And I'm trying to teach them. I'm like, no, your dad invests in assets that appreciate or give value. And I'm not talking down against a truck, but like, if I had to do it over again and I could have that brand new truck or a greenhouse, I'd build the greenhouse. Yep. So it is a sacrifice. I mean, when I sold that Nauvoo property, I had the ability to do some amazing stuff with it, but I chose to build a greenhouse. So I think you can expect, maybe that's your equivalent. Yeah. Sacrifice a truck and maybe you'd be able to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, cost-wise, there's a lot of cost the way I built mine because I built mine over substantial. You know, I did my grow bed walls, my exterior walls are concrete. The top of the greenhouse on the backside is metal. I did, you know, 3 to 4 inches of spray foam insulation. So because I had that, I had the money to do that, I was able to do that. You know, and I kind of want to put a caveat there. I understand right now that people are struggling with inflation. So if you have the money to build a greenhouse, you should. If you have the money and the desire, you should. If you don't have it, remember Jill and I's message that you should do small and simple things, which might be even more effective. But yeah, so that's why we really felt compelled to, as a prepper, you want to be a gray man. You don't want to like, hey, here am I. Here's where the food's at. And I wrestled with that, but I knew that there might be people that want to see some of that. And so that's why I, you know, a lot of my homestead channel will be some of the other things that we're doing, the backyard meat rabbits, the goats, the milk cow, and we're restoring some old rock historic homes. So there's some entertainment and some chaotic value there, but the playlist on the greenhouse, there's two of them, different updates of how it's performing in winter and summer. And the other playlist is exactly how we build it, what the holes look like, what the cold sinks look like, because we have cold sinks too, another set of tubes. So all of those things, I felt like, Nate, you need to document that and just give it away.
I love that. And definitely, guys, go watch the channel because it's hard to visualize it when you're listening to this. I mean, you can kind of make a picture in your mind, but he has such good resources on his YouTube channel. So please go watch and let that be inspiration for you. And just to kind of underscore what you said, Nate, you know, sometimes even with our greenhouse, I get criticized. We're like, why did you build that? You didn't need that. I don't need a greenhouse like that. And I'm like, you're right. You probably don't, like, especially, you know, if someone's listening and they're in the South, you don't probably need a greenhouse. You don't need a Wallapini. I think folks like you and I are choosing to live in extreme areas. And so we have to take those extreme measures. But even that said, I can grow a ton outside. I grow a ton in my outdoor garden. I did that for a decade before we ever built the greenhouse. The greenhouse was something we saved for. And it was like, it was a fun purchase, but not a fun purchase because it has a purpose. But like you said, I'm like, some people go on vacations. I chose to spend my money on the greenhouse. And I love it. And it's great if, you know, food prices continue to rise and things get crazy, but it's not necessary to still grow a ton of really good food.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and as we, as we shift into, we're in a very inflationary environment. You know, people right now are struggling. And as hard as it is to go to the grocery store now, there could be very good likelihood. You know, I was reading a headline that JP Morgan is expecting the base rate to move up to 8%, which could potentially change mortgage rates to 10%. Okay, translate that to us. Mortgages and food could actually get even worse. And so if you can, I get it. Sometimes people always make fun of the how much those homegrown tomatoes cost or how much those backyard chickens cost. It's cheaper to go get eggs. And I would just caveat that. I would just warn with that. Yes, if it's available. I remember during the egg shortage in 2021, my wife didn't even know it was happening because we walked outside and we just picked up our own eggs. And so that's why we do those backyard efforts, so we can have not just the quantity, but the quality. And so I would just encourage everybody to think of that, because economically it is tough right now. So that some of these more simple things you can do, and you can insulate yourself from what's already hard that could actually get a little bit harder.
Yes, absolutely. I was actually joking with someone the other day, you know, and I used to say it too a decade ago. I'd be like, yeah, grow your own eggs, but they're actually more expensive than the store. And like with the way things are going, I'm like, I think a lot of our homegrown stuff is actually starting to even out pretty good. Yes. Like it's getting much closer. And like I always say, even if, you know, nothing crazy happens, life goes back to normal, debatable. I doubt that'll completely happen, but you still have that quality of life. You still have all the good things that come with growing your food. You're still eating better because the industrial grocery store food has lots of issues. Even if it's cheap, it has issues. So yeah, it's hard to beat that. One more quick question before we sign off, sort of random, but do you ever deal with pests? And if so, do you have any tricks? Because I know in my greenhouse, aphids are troublesome and I've never had aphids before and I'm dealing with them in there. So do you have any pest strategies?
Yeah. So, we had a slug infestation like early on, and this is where I am not my grandpa. I am Nate and he is Burr. And yeah. So I actually thought slugs were good for a greenhouse. And so we let them go and it became World War Slug. And we went and bought those green tree frogs, and then my kids went and got toads and we let them in the greenhouse. And my slug issue is almost like non-existent now. Now, the other thing that I did, and I can't measure this, but you hear the birds in the background. So we introduced zebra finches to the greenhouse. It gives an amazing ambiance. But the gentleman, the old timer who had a greenhouse who had these zebra finches, his claim is that that is something that's beneficial for aphids.
And really?
So I'm trying to find a way to measure that, because when they have the babies, which they do regularly, they're like the rabbits of the bird family. They have a lot of babies.
Nice.
And they are they're looking for that kind of, you know, insects and larvae to feed their babies. So I think there's benefit there. And one last thing I would say is another master gardener who visits the greenhouse and is a really good friend. He's teaching me how to make comfrey compost, where in a plastic, you know, 50 gallon drum, you just shove compost as tight as you can get it, put a rock on top of it, saturate it with water, let it set, and you make a black comfrey tea. And so I here in a few months, I'll be able to tell you, but he says you can get your plants so healthy that you will actually be able to repel aphids. And he's even saying some of the white powdery mildew, that kind of stuff. So that's okay. Another thing that I'm trying to do. And the last thing is give them some sacrificial plants. For example, sweet potatoes, aphids love them, and they will flock to that every so often. Just go get a trash bag and sacrifice it and rip it outside and kill them. I mean, you can, there's a few tips, but I'm still trying to learn more, and I'll report back to you on the comfrey tea, see if that does anything for me.
I am fascinated by that. And I love the idea. It reminds me of a permaculture interview I did when we were talking about garden problems or growing problems. He's like, we always want to subtract from the garden, take away the slugs, take away the aphids. And he's like, what can you add to the garden to help balance it out? Like you said, tree frogs. My kids would love tree frogs. I don't know if that would work here, but tree frogs, toads, comfrey. I think that's such a cool perspective versus going scorched earth with the pesticides, which I wouldn't do anyway, but a lot of people do.
Yes. Well, I went scorched earth before that, and I paid my, I was doing a greenhouse tour, and I told my daughters, 10 cents a slug. We came back, Sienna had 400 slugs, Alyssa had 300 slugs. I was out $70, 700 slugs, yeah. while I was showing in a good-hearted way somebody the greenhouse. So yeah, a $10 tree frog is a lot cheaper than Alyssa and Sienna.
That's awesome. That's a lot of slugs. Kudos to the girls. That's a ton of slugs.
They're gone now, and I've learned a lesson.
Yes, yes. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm very regretful we have to cut this short. Nate, thank you so much. Everyone listening, please go look at his YouTube channel. You're going to get so much more information. Nate is a wealth of knowledge. Any last parting words before we sign off for anyone just who needs a little extra encouragement towards greenhouse stuff?
Yeah, no, I would just commend you, Jill, on your efforts, because I think that there's just so many of us normal people that are trying. And I mean, it's interesting to try to put yourself out there, you know, Manti Homestead or Old Fashioned on Purpose, you know, Prairie Homestead. We're doing it because we're trying to help people. And like I say, years ago, when you visited Nebraska, there was a younger Nate that was really dreaming. So you just don't know. I'd keep up those efforts and encourage your listeners to go. If you're trying to do something, you know, if you're trying to do potatoes, go check out Jill's videos on potatoes. And I don't know. We have more knowledge at our fingertips than we've ever had.
Yes.
And you can do it. Whatever your listeners are looking to do, just do it this year. This is not the year to slack, and just do it. Trust me. Do it.
Yep. Amen. I think those are some good parting words. And thank you for the shameless plug. Also, I did not pay him to say that, guys. So.
But I can give you my address after the interview, Jill. Just kidding.
Oh, fair enough. I'll send you some books and stuff.
So, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
Yep. All righty. Well, thank you again, Nate, and everybody. Thanks for listening. And if you're wanting to build a greenhouse this year, I'm excited for you. Definitely send me your updates over on social media when it happens, because that's a pretty big step and it's pretty exciting. So thanks for listening, guys, and I'll catch up with you on the next episode of Old Fashioned on Purpose.